Shall we scribble? Welcome to Scribble, 30 minutes of conversation, comments, and reviews on reading and writing, editing, publishing, and selling books. I'm Roald Tweet.
And I'm Don Wooten. Garrison Keillor will join us a bit later after we talk to Herb Trix, WVIK News Director, our guest today on Scribble. And with that, let's welcome Herb Trix, who's a familiar voice on the station here.
Well, thank you, Don. I usually don't get quite that fanfare at the beginning. In the old days, we had it in commercial radio with the teletype and all the sound effects and everything.
Yeah. How did you get into the business of radio, and what led you to news and radio? Most people who start out as DJs.
Mm-hmm. I did. I was always interested in journalism, and I saw an ad one day for a broadcasting workshop, and the little light bulb went off, a very small light bulb, but it went off nonetheless and said, broadcast journalism. So I enrolled and they were happy to take my money, and I didn't have any obvious speech impediments at that time. And so I learned the basics of production and cutting tape with a razor blade and grease pencil and all that we used to do. And then my first job was at a country western station as a disc jockey.
That's the path. You've missed that role. How did you?
Yes, I. Well, my first job at college was writing continuity for the local radio station.
I did not know that.
Yes, it was WCAL.
For heaven's sakes.
In Northfield, Minnesota.
We're all radio creatures.
Yes.
I always felt you were a more pristine personality.
Right.
Than you were.
I sat there writing continuity.
Oh, my. But, to be a DJ, you don't write anything. Or were you insecure enough that you had to write?
Well, the whole idea of being a disc jockey is speaking off the cuff, ad-libbing, looking at a record label and deciding what you're going to say. And you've got 13 seconds to walk up the intro, as we used to say, and you have to get everything in at the right time with the right number of seconds.
Uh-huh. Well, that was back when you actually had records.
And, yeah, you actually picked them and actually played them, and they weren't off a satellite programmed in Dallas or Los Angeles or someplace.
Yeah, that has all changed now.
Mm-hmm.
It's everything is off the satellite, and But moving to news, was that really a deliberate choice?
Yeah, I knew I wasn't a great entertainer. I didn't think my future was playing the hits for forever and ever, so I sort of slowly wormed my way into the more adult part of the operation.
How did you do that?
By being willing to do crazy hours and weekends and early mornings and, filling in for people when they were on vacation. And then I applied for some full-time jobs and got accepted or hired in Freeport, Illinois.
Well, a broadcast capital of the Midwest.
Yeah, you start in a small market, work your way up, you read the hospital report and obituaries, and you sit in on city council meetings and read the ambulance reports every morning on your way to work and go on from there.
Yeah. Did you bounce around, as so many people do in radio?
Oh, a little bit, not too much. I mean, it was Roswell, New Mexico, and then Topeka, and then Freeport, and then Springfield for a year, and then up
that
here.
That sounds bouncy to me.
it started out that way. And then from Springfield up here to WHBF Radio. For 3 years, and then one night you appeared in my newsroom talking about a job opening at WVIK.
Yeah, well, like an apparition.
Sort of like Dickens, almost. Yeah. No?
But the whole business of writing for radio, the accusation that is often placed, and particularly early on and in small stations with some justice, is that what you did for radio news was just tear something out of the newspaper and read it. And that was, unfortunately, pretty much the case, because what else could you do?
Mm-hmm. Well, there were time constraints.
Yeah.
It strikes me that you could be guilty of the opposite, too, of inventing a world that is your philosophy of life and selecting the news that sort of fits in. You could make this a really nice day for your listeners, or you could make it a really bad day, right? So how do you – and obviously your own feelings. I know some of the news stories you select for their humor and stuff. I mean, that's your personal opinion,
mm-hmm.
right? And so part of what we get is the unbiased news, but told by Herb Trix.
Well, yeah, that's when people talk about whether there's bias in the media these days. To me, there's a few people that have a point of view and put it in their stories, and the networks that do that on television are well known. But for the most part, I think whatever bias there might be is just in the choice of stories. You know, the presentation is fairly objective for the most part, I think. But it is my decision what stories get run, and that's that's the gatekeeper role. That's why I get the big bucks here.
Yeah. How do you balance in news? And, of course, since we have NPR here, they pretty well cover the world and mm-hmm. The nation. So what is left to you is the local news. But there are newscasts in which you do both, don't you?
Yeah, there's 2 o'clock in the afternoon and some other times when you have that opportunity. And you just... it's just whatever happens to be big that day. Since 2008, I've often found there's an economic story that is important. On Monday mornings, the Trilby Lundberg's weekly reading of gas prices is something that is usually pretty big. At least I think so.
Uh-huh.
And then from there, you mix in local news and hope that you've got the right mixture.
Go ahead.
How much do you actually rewrite some of the stuff that comes over the wire?
Well, the comes over the wire, I don't rewrite it much, partly because of time constraints.
Right.
I mean, you take out the worst stuff and you try and break up the sentences because the people that write the wire, they used to have a broadcast wire and then a print wire.
Right.
But with the economics of the business anymore, they just send you one version and it's basically mostly a print version. And so you sort of try and break it up, and after too many years of trying to make it sound readable, you at least make a decent attempt to make it sound good.
How about local news? How do you cover that?
Well, it's sort of a question of what's going on that day and that week. The Rock Island County Board is talking about Hope Creek, so we mentioned that. Davenport is doing some things, and it's the biggest city in the area, so that counts for something. There's an interesting exhibit opening at the Figge Art Museum. We figure our listeners are interested in a lot of things. They're well-rounded. They like politics and current affairs and school boards and things, but they're also interested in the cultural things going on, too.
How do you write? I mean, is there a particular discipline in writing for radio? You mentioned already the print version and the radio version of network news, and the print version tends to be rather long-winded.
Mm-hmm.
Do you always write in short sentences?
Most of the time. I mean, I've been doing it so long, it's sort of ingrained. It sort of seems quite obvious to me now, and it wouldn't be quite so obvious to other people. And the students I work with lead me to believe it's not at all obvious to many of them. It's just the idea is simple, direct, and descriptive. People listening to the radio are generally doing something else, so you can't make it wildly complicated. You have to sort of build in details one or two at a time. So you have sort of a headline, a lead, taxes are going up in Rock Island. And then you say, you add a little bit more, last night the city council approved this. And then the next sentence you add in a little bit more, how would that affect the average homeowner? And then from there you'd say what the city needs the extra money for.
You also do a lot of interviews. Mm-hmm. How do you decide which ones to do?
Well, there again, it's which stories seem like they would be most interesting at that particular time. So much of it is sort of a competition. You know, what's big today may not be quite so exciting 3 days from now.
Right.
We go through a tremendous amount of copy. Most news operations do, and it just changes from day to day.
How do you train students to write for radio? I mean, is that, what's involved? How do you change or how do you point them to a style?
Well, partly you have to sort of convince them to not think about the way they've been writing their college papers. As I say here on campus, I say, don't write the way you do over there, meaning in the academic buildings, because that's not our style. You know, it's simple, direct, subject, verb, predicate. Basically, that's what you're aiming for. And so you just sit down with them, and over time, you sort of browbeat them into getting it right. Mm-hmm. You know, you start out with, what's the most important thought in this story? The cost, you know, taxes are going up in the city. And they say, okay, when did this happen? And then from there you say, why did it happen? You know, just who, what, why, when, and where.
Have there been big changes since you began writing news? I know in print journalism, for example, it's much more permissible now for the writer to be there, right? Mm-hmm. We were standing by the grave watching. You know, mm-hmm. when I was taking journalism courses in 1952, that was a no-no.
Yeah, you
never intruded. Is that different in broadcast journalism too now?
Oh, it sort of depends on the person and the operation. I think there's still, many of those rules are still in effect, or they're guidelines that most people follow most of the time. But, you know, I remember being at WHBF back in the 80s, and our news director, who'd been in the business for a while, I don't think he ever wrote a complete sentence. Used to drive me crazy to try and read something he'd written. But if he read it, it was fine. You know, yeah, somehow it worked for him. And we had four news anchors when I was at WHBF Radio for a couple of years. And to see the copy from the four people, how different they all were, it was quite amazing. But it was good training trying to make someone else's copy, you know, fit for you.
For a long time, WHBF was the news powerhouse in the mm-hmm. community. I can remember, I was astounded when I got there. That was, 52. And they had two men who did nothing but edit. Mm-hmm. You wrote the stories, and then you handed it to them. And they decided how this should be retyped. Mm-hmm. They would give it to you to retype, or they would change it themselves. Mm-hmm. And you couldn't go on the air without edited copy.
Mm-hmm.
That's gone. But then most news departments are gone, too.
Yeah, so many. Well, there was deregulation back in the 80s of radio and television, and just the economics of it, there's fewer people. So, I would love to have someone edit my stuff, but generally it doesn't happen because I'm on my own, and the only editing it gets is the next morning when Michelle O'Neill reads it during the morning newscasts, and I come in later in the morning and see all the pencil marks she's put in it. And I say, oh, yeah, that is better. I wish she'd told me that last night.
Well, that's the thing. There are two principal voices on the station, morning, afternoon, and evening.
Mm-hmm.
And you work in others, though, from time to time as interns and so on. Is it worth it? I mean, you bring in someone who is new,
mm-hmm.
and then you have to spend a lot of time training them, and then they're gone.
Well, you know, Don, it's sort of partly your fault. You've always made education a principal role of the station, not just, a focus on arts and culture. And, you know, in a sense, someone has to think of the next generation someone's got to carry on this business after all of us get out of it, retire or fall over or whatever. And it keeps me sharp, I think, to be reminded that this is different, that it's not natural for most people. I think it's generally worthwhile.
As you look at the arc of news through the day, do stories change? Do you find yourself repeating things because audiences are changing and the news stays the same?
To a certain extent, I mean, you do some day parting with music and with news, too. I mean, in the middle of the day, people are generally there for a longer time, as opposed to morning drive when the turnover can be, every 10 or 15 minutes or every half hour. In morning drive, you don't have as much time, and you have to always tell them what time it is, and you always have to tell them what the weather is. And then if you have time for the news, then you can fit that in, too. So you have to be shorter and quicker because people during morning drive and evening drive too are doing other things. I mean, more than usual, they're doing other things. They're driving, they're cooking, they're picking up kids, they're getting dressed, you know, they're doing 100 things, and you have to sort of fit into that somehow.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things I really listen for with your news, Herb, are those little bits of repartee with Mindy. When did that start, and how did that start?
I think it sort of started by accident. It was sort of, you know, that style has been going on for decades in TV and radio news, you know, something lighter at the end. And I just did it with the 2 o'clock news because I was there live reading 5 minutes of news. And I thought after all of this depressing stuff, what I sometimes call the daily carnage, it was nice to have something a little lighter, or something to smile with, a sort of a news dessert, I call it.
And Mindy never stops with a smile.
No.
Yeah. And it was also partly the goal was to get Mindy to laugh on the air.
Well, that's no big trick.
No, it isn't.
Yeah, but some work better than others. And
yes.
Well, and it's funny how that has become a signature thing. The 2 o'clock news, at that time of day, you wouldn't expect much of a tune-in. Mm-hmm. But I know there are people who would not miss it just to see what goes on. And when it doesn't occur, there's a real letdown.
Yeah.
Well, I'm always kind of amazed that there is nearly every day there's something to put in there. You find this stuff on the wire and you think to yourself, you can't make this up. You know, this is not even script writers for comedies on television come up with some of these things.
Yeah, it's true. There are so many strange things occurring in the world.
Yeah, and just people are endlessly interesting, bizarre, entertaining, however you wanted to explain it, and most of the time without meaning to be.
The key question is, I talked about old-time radio. Do you lean on newspapers?
A little bit. Partly, I've look at the paper every day to find out what other people are covering. Did I miss something? I use it partly as a sort of a calendar. Oh, yeah, there's something coming up in 3 days I need to pay attention to or I'd like to cover. Or there's a court date coming up that I've, you know, something I'd like to file away. I never have read the newspaper. Sometimes I've used it to make sure I get the right spelling, right name, right amount.
I see you on the phone all the time, and so you check the original sources.
I like to, as much as possible. I try and be an old-style, you know, exacting news person, when there's time. You know, most of the time it's just confirming, you know, is this the right time and date and place? Is this the right name, number, age, you know, all those basic things. Because I always tell the students, you know, there's about 100 definitions of good writing in our business, but there's only really one definition of getting the facts. You know, mm-hmm. the person's age has to be right, their name has to be right, where they're from has to be right, because people will notice when you get that wrong. Mm-hmm. You know, they may not say, gee, that's the best written story I've ever heard, but they say, no, wait a minute, I know that guy, and he isn't 55, you know.
When you came here, you said, you warned me you'd only be here for 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you may be a great newsman, but you're a poor prophet.
Yes, I've made mistakes like that many times. But once or twice I got it right. I remember years ago you asked me what was going to be a big story in the coming year, and I said garbage. And, it was a big year for the environmental stories and the local landfills and things like that.
Uh-huh. Well, all right. I guess you're something of a prophet.
One out of 25 isn't bad.
I can prophesy something on my own. We're now going to hear from, well, first of all, I'll thank Herb Trix, WVIK News Director, for being our guest today. Now we will turn to Garrison Keillor.